Yandava Zove Sange Rigpa Dan Shamsu Tenpa Tenwara Jigden Jemba Jebo Deve Kalo Yorwa Lana Minam Je Dumba Sange Jomden Deve Jawa Shaja Duba Lacha Chudo Jazo Cheo Dumba Jomden Deje Jawa Da Jomba Yandava Zove Shabzo denba devara sheba jigden kemba jebo dube kalo Lanna meba lada menam je denba sanje chomden de benja chanja duba Chudu javzu jeo denba chomden de dijin sheba ta chomba yandamba Rigpa dan shabzu denpa devara sheba jigden kemba jebo duve kalo juwa lana Lada minan je denpa sanje jomden de bejawa shaja duva laja Chudu javzu jeho Kumbho jizun jambi yangla jazi lo kangi lo tu timni tindi nyenda namda rabzi. Tungun jishin zichi nyingi toga lewa zi ganda sibi tsura amat mindumu dunye gizi ve chozo kunla puji tarzi yinla chuzhi yang. Chukdara chidro nyumu nilung legi chadro chuzi. Mari mizi dunye nyugu chini chunzi redi na. Tene taji saju tazu yundin lunzo yase tuvi Chuta chuta chuni kende dalu mizi jambi Du omo ara baza na de Omo ara baza na de Omo araba zana de Omo araba zana de 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 Kada tenju shunglu toba Lodru bome nao Tsedo su Jujin medo tama rira Lenji nyende genpa de Sanje shindo mikde bhuwa ye Jugun namda shindo chubara sho Lame dhamba ki namangi chugu kala kenzi tindini Chedara zambe dujan zima la sabji chui Charva abdo su yedan gururana Dayame Tsungi chona la chanchu bado tani jabzu che Tagi chushi jibi sonama Drola benje sanje drobara sho Sanje chuda tsungi chonama Chanchu bado tani jabzu che Tagi chushi jibi sonama Drola benje sanje drobara sho Sanje chodan sonje chonama la chanju bado Tagi chushi jibe sonama je drola penje san chobara sho Lada lame medame anje umbodan gajin lazo chuje chola chava chepana Sanje sumba rabdo shishin tewe gyujoba deda shinje tambe chunye shinne deshishin Namo laye jata luta nujin je rupunta ta miye je namda Ndowa kunje chana shisamba tamche je tu taki chu tuen tu You want me to press? Good morning. How are you this morning? It's a cold morning. I see new faces. Can you introduce?
Oh, I'm Arzu.
Mm-hmm. Have you been coming, member?
No, this is my first time.
I see. Okay.
It was Wednesday night across the street.
I see. And how about you?
My name is Cody.
Cody, okay. And you are also a newcomer here?
Yes, sir.
I see.
Same thing with her.
I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, have you seen the program on the website?
Yes.
Yeah, so what we do is normally 1 week we do the actual discussion, kind of pedagogy, and then the alternate week, the next week, we normally do meditation. So today is the meditation day. Yeah. And then, yeah, we always have this before we start the class. We have a sharing session. So we want people to encourage what we have learned to put into practice. So the whole week was supposed to apply what you have learned and then share the insight in the class so that others can also benefit. So that's what we normally do. So we will begin with that. Please, anyone. Yes.
So I found more time to read the first stanza. Whenever that stuff comes up, I will be aware and avert it. I was more mindful. It also struck me that I have to believe that I can change.
So right.
That engaged this idea of impermanence and emptiness. That sort of, for me, made a connection that yes, it is possible to change.
Okay. Yeah. You are right. Yeah. The unique part of the Buddhist teaching is that, you know, we have control over our life. We have control over happiness and suffering. If we don't want to experience suffering or undesirable experiences, then we can avert it, we can prevent it. And if we want to experience happiness all the time, we can do it. So that's the best part. We are not relying on some external factors to provide us that feeling of happiness. Yeah. But it is all here. That's the main teaching. So most of the time, yeah, we mistakenly think that happiness is something to do with external things. That's why we continue, you know, trying to fix external things. But we know that after you fix one external things, there is another thing to fix, and there's another thing. So it's endless. Whereas if we fix here, then yeah, that's it. So that's why this Chandidevas quote about putting a piece of leather on your soul. That's so logical, so rational. Instead of trying to, you know, yeah, those who haven't heard about it. So this is I find it very useful. And so that's why I quote this frequently. So this is about saying that if you want to avoid those prickly thorns in the forest, and one way is to cover all that forest with leather. But that's impossible. You won't find enough leather to cover the whole forest. But instead, if you just cut a small piece of leather and just put it on your soul, that's like covering the whole leather. Of course, these were during those times when we don't have shoes. Now it's like if you just put on a pair of shoes, that will prevent you all from all those prickly thorns. So likewise, if you try to kind of bulldoze all the, what do you call it, the conditions that give rise to all the problems. There is no way we can do that. As I mentioned earlier, if you fix that one, another will come up. But if you do here, if you fix your mindset, if you try to work here, like say for anger, the person, you may have disagreements with many people. If you try to eliminate all these people, no way. How are you going to eliminate those people? One way is to kill them. Then you will get into trouble. But if you are able to practice tolerance, that's like eliminating all your adversaries or enemies. So that's the main point. So you are right, we have to understand, have this understanding that yes, I have the power over myself. I can do. I am not under the control of, you know, external things. I can do it. So with that understanding, and then if you practice, that will make a difference. Thank you. Anybody? Yes?
I just, you know, after your teachings, I needed to review the six perfections. Because they remind me of what I need to do, as you said, to improve myself. And so that was just what I did this week, was just kind of read over and as things arose, try to apply them.
Okay, very good, very good. Thank you. It's very encouraging because I see that because of these classes, you are trying to, you know, really do something. So that's very encouraging for me. So that kind of drives me for these classes. Yeah, because that's what I wanted, you see. It's not just attending here. I emphasize this all the time and you will hear me say that again and again. Yeah, most important thing is, you know, it's not about how much we learn, how much knowledge we gain. It's about how much we apply in our lives. So even if you know a very little, but if you apply that, that's better than, you know, knowing a lot but not applying at all. So that's why I am encouraging you for this kind of sharing, because I believe that if I do that, you will try to, you know, apply during the week. So that, you know, it can form a habit. Then if it becomes a habit, it is your second nature. So you don't have to contrive. It comes automatically. It comes naturally. That's very good. So that's the whole purpose. Anybody?
Yeah.
Yes.
For me, as a Westerner, the refuge, it's like the song Stand By Me. It's I won't be afraid if you stand by me, and it says, no matter the sky falls, the mountain crumbles to the sea. And that's what I felt like. And this week, I found a wonderful quote from the third Dalai Lama, and it says this: moons and stars may fall to earth, mountains and valleys may crumble, and even the sky may disappear. But you, O Buddha, speaks nothing false. And then it goes on: from evil comes suffering, therefore day and night one should think and rethink about how to escape misery forever. And talks about the root of all goodness and so forth. But it's almost the same words. It was like the third Dalai Lama, it was like, whoa, you know. It was like, this was like, gave me a jolt, you know. It's something I will never forget.
Yeah, refuge, yeah. I think this is good, you know, when you think of this, reflect on why Buddha achieved, worked towards Buddhahood. That's main goal, main purpose is to help us. So now that he has achieved that enlightenment, so there's no way that he will ignore us. He is always looking down. Down, is it right? Looking out for us, looking for how to help. But as I mentioned, the ring is there, but we lack the hook. We are not creating that hook. So the ring is there. If you don't, you know, create this one, no way. No way, you know, Buddha can help. It's like helpless. I want to help you. But, you know, I show you the path. But if you don't practice, then there's nothing I can do. It's like the lottery story. Yes, I heard your prayer, you know. But you have to buy the lottery ticket if you want to win. Yeah. If you buy the lottery ticket and then, you know, you pray to God or whatever, then there is chance. But you keep praying and, you know, but if you don't buy the ticket, then no way you will strike the lottery. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, yes.
Through the whole week, I've been thinking about the refuge, mm-hmm. Three jewels, Buddha Sangha, Buddha Dharma Sangha.
Mm-hmm.
So, I always, it solidifies my devotion towards Lama, because Dalai Lama is the manifestation of this Buddha Sangha and Dharma. We
mm-hmm.
can see it and we can always listen to him. So that solidifies myself, and so I have more dedication, more respect, more attached to Dalai Lama's. And I was praying one of his guru, which is Guru Soldev, and he was all in the, at the first part he was thinking about all the suffering and to all human beings, and but at the last part of the prayer, it is so, he was so thinking about Kangjinpa, how, why they are suffering so much. Now it's your time to save them. I was, tears came from my eyes, and I was like crying
half of my that's
very good. Mm. So thank you, and after I attend this, I attend so many teachings, but when he said this is not one part, we have to do together. And also applying is more than saying or listening. So it keeps me rolling whole.
Okay, very good.
So thank you so much.
Thank you. Anyone? Yes.
I had a great reminder to practice because of the a reminder of impermanence and death. For a number of years on Saturday mornings in the fall, another friend and I have led a training workout for cross-country skiers. It's 2 hours of intervals up and down a steep hill. And 20 years ago, it was led by a Norwegian guy named Bjørn Lasserud, a very great skier, and he was my age. And now I heard yesterday, first of all, this was part of my reminder that he has heart failure and he doesn't have much time left. And I remember him 20 years ago tirelessly doing this workout up and down the hill and exhorting us to get trained and fit. And Bjorn's time is almost gone. And that was not that long ago. It was 20 years ago. And the other reminder I had was that I used to be one of the strongest people on the hill. And now I just get all these aches and pains, and it's really hard for me to do the workout and also try to exhort people and get them to work and train and enjoy the process of training. And it just reminded me, you know, my time is limited too. As much as I have enjoyed all of this, it's going to go away. And I just can't hold on to it, or the expectation that I can do what I could do 20 years ago, or that 10 years from now I can do what I could do now. It's a very poignant reminder for me.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we have a saying in Tibetan. Chuchi juma de nishu tals. Chuchi do chedo nishu tals. Maju maju shine nishu tal. Mizu tomba sebe namdar yins. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. I have a friend in Malaysia. So sometimes I just tease her in Tibetan, and her response is, same to you. So this means that, you know, how our life just passes away, you know, in all these worldly things. So that was, of course, many years ago when, you know, Tibetan average age is 60 years. People live, you know, around 60 and then, yeah, that's it, because it's very harsh life in Tibet. So it says that Chu Chi Ju Ma Ding Yishu tells. So the first 20 years, you know, you are just baby, toddler, then kindergarten, then school, all this. Yeah, it never crossed your mind to practice Dharma. So 20 years just passed by, not even remembering, not even occurring that thought to practice Dharma. So 20 years passed by. And then after 20 years, you get a job, you have to establish your career, and then, you know, you settle in your life, all this. And then, I will practice. But you get so involved in this, you know, your career and job and all work and all that. So another 20 years pass by. Then you're already 40 years old. But then at the age of 40, of course, this is different. In the West, 60 or 40 is new, what was that? There's a phrase, isn't it? New 40. Yeah. But yeah, Tibetan, yeah, 40 is like, oh, I'm old. So it's, oh, now I'm too old, you know, I cannot practice. So another 20 years pass. It's like, majung means, oh, I couldn't practice. Now I'm too old, couldn't practice. So another 20 years pass by. And then it says, that's the empty life story. Empty story of my, what do you call, my empty life story. So you just end. 60, then the time comes. So this kind of, you know, when your friends or somebody, you know, suddenly having this kind of sudden death, yeah, it is very powerful to jolt you out of this, you know, your, what you call, engagement in otherworldly things. And then, you know, that should actually not just reminding you of this impermanence, but that should enable you to really practice. Otherwise, yeah, oh yeah, you died, something. Then you continue doing whatever you are doing. Then it's the same. There's no much difference. Yeah, so that's important. Thank you. Anyone? Anyone? Okay. No pressure.
I was reading recently, and I've been thinking about more about the sense of perfect transformation and increase into the more the results of the refuge.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a thing that was very important. It seemed to say that if you study shunyata and you only study that, it's like cutting off one of your legs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the bodhicitta and a refuge, only that, then it also is like only having one leg. So it's better to study both, and one prior to the other, because it creates a stronger foundation.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's the whole point of refuge. Refuge is to, if you have the refuge, then it will propel you to practice this. Because remember we discussed that, you know, when you have this kind of fear for uncertainty, then what happens is you take refuge in three jewels. And then taking refuge does not mean that you just, you know, pray and that's all. It's you have to practice what Buddha taught. So when it comes to the instruction, when it comes to actually practicing, that's where all this, the practice of our, you know, insight, meditation of emptiness and all this comes. So you see, without that, without refuge, it is less likely that you will progress into your spiritual journey or path. Mm. Yes?
As I mentioned this to you once before, perhaps it would be a good time to address the issue that I think we have a little bit in the West, the Western world. There's, I think, a tendency to avoid the notion of hierarchies, somebody's higher up or more advanced. So it addresses the issue of Sangha. I'm going to refuge for the superior Sangha. I think from your perspective, is there some differences? Sanghas, that's not everybody who comes and sits on the cushion on a regular basis. And then the other half of that was that I asked because we mentioned Sangha, superior Sangha, we look for encouragement and ways to practice and to get help for practice. But then at the other side of it is in the West, we also say, well, we're not encouraged to talk about our attainments. So it's like this dichotomy of a Sangha who may or may not have attainments. And then we talked about that we addressed the idea there's a kind of a hierarchy in terms of refuge.
Okay. Okay, I think I will try to bring that in when we recap. Okay, let's recap. Okay. The causes of going for refuge. You wanted quits. Okay, go ahead. The two causes, what are they?
So the fear of samsara and cyclic existence, suffering or rebirths, and belief that the three jewels can protect you.
So there's fear and then the confidence in the three jewels. So fear, I have to clarify here. So we are not here, that fear we are talking about is not the neurotic fear. It is the intelligent fear. Why we say that intelligent fear? There's a basis. Because from the Buddhist point of view, your birth, your rebirth, whatever it is, you know, at the moment we are alive, but one day we have to die. When we die, our body, of course, we have to leave behind, but our consciousness still continues and has to take a birth. And that, you don't have choice. You cannot say, oh, I want to be born as a prince, you know. I want to be born as, I don't know, a daughter or son of a billionaire or whatever. We don't have freedom to choose our birth. It is determined by our action. That's what we call karma in our past life. So that's why when we honestly reflect of our actions, so normally there's a saying that, you know, Nama kangje tade lula tu, chima kangdo tade lela tu. You are expert, isn't it? Do I need to explain that? Same to you. Yeah, so it says, Nama kangje tade lula tu. What karma you have created, if you want to know, it says just look at your present situation. From your present situation, you can infer that, you know, what you have done in the past. And then chima kangdo tade lula tade lela tu, that means where you are going to be born, it said that you just look at your action, observe your action. If your action is more towards, leaning towards positivity, virtue, then of course there's guarantee that, you know, you are going to achieve a good rebirth. But if you are not, if you are like me, you know, all the time, you know, under the control of this, let's say, attachment, hatred, anger, ignorance, we I think most of us are, you know, under that delusion. So from that, we can see that, oh, it's most likely that we are not going somewhere, you know, favorable. So that's why it's called intelligent fear. And with that fear, it's not like, you know, I'm helpless. You still have time. You can still do something about it. So with that kind of fear, you can prepare. So that's why it's different. Neurotic fear is, you know, there's no baseless. You just, there's a lot of anxiety there. You are just worrying and worrying. And when you really analyze that, there is no reason, there is no basis for that. But here, there is a basis. So that's why it's an intelligent fear. And then, of course, this fear of suffering of lower rebirth is the, what do you call, the refuge of lower persons of lower scope. So their main goal is to guarantee a good rebirth. So that's why the causes is fear of suffering or lower rebirths. And then you have refuge or person of medium scope. So their goal is to achieve what you call freedom from samsara. Even if you achieve a good rebirth next life, you are still under the control of your karma and delusion. As long as you are born in samsara, there is no freedom. You are all the time, you know, subject to delusion, anger, suffering, all that. So their main goal is to achieve nirvana. So the fear of the suffering of samsara is the one that propels the person to seek refuge. And then we have Mahayana, or the person of great scope. So their refuge, the causes of their refuge, is fear of the suffering of all sentient beings. When you look at yourself, you realize that, wow, all that you are subject to, all that of that kind of suffering. And then you also think of other sentient beings. They are also in the same boat, subject to all this samsaric suffering. So you have this fear for all the sentient beings. So that propels you to seek refuge. So there are three types of refuge. Yeah. And then all that, the confidence that, you know, Buddha is the person to seek refuge. We have discussed the four qualities, why they are worthy. Can you name any volunteers? The four reasons why Buddhas are worthy of refuge. I'm quizzing you.
They're free from all of the delusions and yes. suffering, and they're able to help free other beings from
mm-hmm. They are skilled. They are not only free from suffering themselves, but they are skilled in liberating other beings. And then they have compassion. Without compassion, they cannot do. And then
they work for the benefit
yeah,
of all. Like they don't
whether, irrespective of, you know, whether people helped you or this thing, they still help you. If not like that, then, you know, those who are nice to you, you will help those. But those who are, what do you call, what is the word? Yeah, those who are not nice, let's say, to you, for the lack of word. Then, yeah, you don't care. But Buddha is not like that.
Indifferent.
Indifferent, yeah. If people, yeah, that's what I was looking for. Thank you. Then, the objects of refuge, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So what is Buddha? The three objects. Now, I don't want you to point to the statue. Many Tibetans would do. So three objects, what are those, you know? The three objects of refuge, they will say, oh, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So what is Buddha? They will just point to the statue. So Buddha is the enlightened mind, the ultimate wisdom, which is free of all the faults. It's immaculate, yeah, wisdom, yeah. And then Dharma, what is Dharma?
The truth that the Buddha teaches, the way things truly are. The ultimate nature of things.
It's the path to obtain.
The path, ultimate nature, everything is, you know, it's empty of, you know, this thing. So the path, the Dharma is actual realization. The path and realization, like the cessations that, you know, those Arya beings have. So these are Dharma. So we need to really know that. These are the basic ones. If you don't know that, then yeah, it's not good. And then Sangha, now we're coming on to Sangha. So Sanghas are those beings who have those, who possess those realizations, like Arya beings, those who are above the path of seeing. So they have these cessations. They possess these realizations. So those who practiced, those who journeyed on the spiritual path, and then they have realized the path, those are Sangha. So last week we discussed about when it comes to the instructions, what to do, what not to do. So there are specific instructions. So Sangha Those are the sanghas. But of course, normally when we depict sangha in texts and all this, sangha, Tibetan is called gindun. So gindun is normally a combination of four, what do you call it, fully ordained monks or nuns. So this makes, that collection makes sangha. So normally in Tibetan community, when you say sangha, so they always have this, what do you call, understanding that we're talking about ordained monks and nuns. But of course, sangha doesn't mean that it has to be an ordained monk. Those whoever is practicing, lay people, those who practice and have achieved those realizations, those are actual sangha. And then I think in the West, I noticed that you also use the sangha for the center members, those who are practicing. So that was something new to me, because to me, coming from that background, when you say sangha, it's like monks and nuns. That's what we understand. So I think it is perfectly correct to use, because sangha, basically those who are practicing and trying to follow Buddha's path. Mm. So your question about, you know, you don't have to express that I have this realization. Normally, yeah, we always encourage humility. So even if you have so much realization, you normally don't kind of broadcast that. We try to hide our qualities. We don't blow our trumpet, isn't it? Yeah. So it's okay. So you don't have to say if you have realizations. It's very good.
But I have a question about that.
Please.
I had it when the question was posed. If we're going for refuge, all these examples, if we've fallen, we can't help somebody who's falling, and if we're in a quicksand, we can't, help somebody who's also in a quicksand. So we have to go with someone and people who know more than we do, so they can inspire and reach out and we can continue, we're using the Dharma, of course, but, many times when we've seen, and heard different people speaking, we've been inspired.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As opposed to somebody who's in a different place with it.
Yeah, so I think there are distinctions to be made amongst the three refuge. So the actual refuge is Dharma. And Buddha is like the teacher, like the doctor. We normally explained through doctor, we are the patient. And doctor is like the, Buddha is like the doctor. And then Dharma is like the medicine that actually helps you, actually heals you of your ailments. And then Sangha is normally explained as the nurses. You know, nurses are the ones who coordinates with the doctor, doctor, and then that help us all the time, help us to give medication and encourage us by talking to us, explaining things. And that's how sanghas are. When we see those beings who have attained these realizations, that gives us the encouragement, it is possible. If you take refuge in Buddha and follow Buddha's path, it is possible to gain something. Because look at that person, he has that kind of realization. So that's the main point. Through sangha, we are encouraged in our path. Sometimes we feel that I have practiced so long, it's like there's no point. But then when you think of other people who have realization, then you see. I told you about my teacher. When I witness my teacher remaining in that meditative state for 7 days, that really kind of, solidified my faith. I said, if you really practice, there is something you can see. It's not something, talking in the space. There are real realizations. So it is not common, isn't it, for people to, you know, remain in meditation after you are announced dead. So when you see that, it gets inspired. So it makes you practice. So that's the main purpose of going for refuge in Sangha. Did I?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, for instance, looking at the relics, you know, there was relics that...
Yes. Yeah, and then, you know, there are great practitioners. I don't know whether you are aware of this. Many of the great practitioners, relic is one thing, they normally leave behind what is called tukjak chensum. So tuk is the heart, chen, and then the tongue. You know how we cremate, the cremation for the high lamas, so with the fire puja, and then after that, it was sealed, it was made a kind of a dome, and then it was heated there for 3-4 days. And when you dismantle that, it's still warm, but inside you will find things like heart, eyes, and tongue all bundled together, and it is like fresh. Despite all that, everybody has, you know, turned into ashes, everything has turned into ashes, but that still remains there. So these are, how can you explain that? How do you explain that? These are signs of, you know, attainment. So we also discuss about the four reasons. This is mainly about Buddha. So I'm not going to go through this. Then do you remember the individual precepts? Should not. Once you have taken refuge, upon taking refuge in Buddha, what you should not?
Or other sentient beings.
No, should not. These are individual, yeah. So since it's correspond, have to correspond. Mm-hmm. Since you have taken refuge in Buddha, what you should not?
Not take refuge in other worlds.
Yes. What else? Since you have taken refuge in Dharma?
Harm sentient beings.
Yeah, do not harm. Refrain from harming other sentient beings. And then, since you have taken up on taking refuge in Sangha, we should not associate with those holding wrong views.
Also, don't abandon it. You know, at the cost of your life.
Those are the general precepts. If we come later. So now, should. Since you have taken refuge in Buddha, what we should do?
Treat images with respect.
Yeah. And then, in Dharma, honor the writings of the teachings. Remember, I gave you an example how my godmother used to do all that. So we should not place, you know, the texts on the floor, on the ground. We should not step over, cross over. So that's a big challenge for monks when they travel in train. Because train space is so limited and you are carrying those texts, and where should you put it? So there's always a challenge. Then Sangha, we should revere members of the community. That's what we talked about. Then general precepts, recalling the good qualities of the three jewels, go for refuge again and again. Then offer the first portion of your food and drink. If not, you can just do the food offering prayer. Lead others to take refuge. Whatever you do, trust in three jewels. Upon understanding the benefits, go for refuge 3 times in the day and 3 times at night. Have you done that since last week? 3 times in the morning, 3 times in the evening. Very good. Maintain refuge and do not forsake the three jewels, even in the jest or if it costs your life. Can you see anything here? Okay, here. Yeah. Okay, so that's a recap. So now today we are going to do refuge practice. This is more of a traditional practice. What we have been doing so far is more like the secular version. We are just focusing on our breath. So this is what is called visualization practice. So any practice, Dharma practice, whatever we do, it always starts with the motivation. We have a saying that Tokta Nyela Chawanyi. That means there are two important deeds before and after every practice. So at the beginning, it is the motivation, because motivation determines the result, what becomes, or the quality, or the, what do you call, the amount of merit we accumulate depends on our motivation. So there are various motivation. Of course, in psychology, I think there are only extrinsic and intrinsic motivation. So extrinsic is about incentives. You do things, you are motivated by incentives, external rewards. If the pay is good, you take on even though you don't like the job. Whereas intrinsic is something you do that you like. There is no much external reward, but you are propelled to do that because you enjoy doing that. So these, I haven't come across the way we talk about this in psychology, but that is the main two motivation in psychology. But generally, motivation is the one that really drives us. In the morning, there's motivation that pulls us out of our bed to go to work. All this, there is a driving force. So that is motivation. And one of the common motivation for most of us is concern for this life, worldly concern. Now we're talking about practice, yeah? When it comes to practicing Dharma, worldly concerns. We have talked on this many times. We come for classes. Maybe you want to learn and be, you know, knowledgeable in Buddhist study. Or you come here and hoping to gain something so that, you know, you can learn some technique that will help you reduce your, increase the happiness for this life. Or maybe you go to temple because you want achieve, or you want wealth, or you want fame. All these are worldly concerns. So that's I rated this number 4. So that's the last one. That's that. In the first class, remember, if anything you do with that motivation, it does not qualify as Dharma practice. So in order to qualify as Dharma practice, minimum it needs to be motivated by the concern for next life. You are concerned for your future rebirth. So if you do practice anything to achieve optimum human rebirth in your next life, that can be counted as a Dharma practice. And that is what we call the practice of the person of small scope. And then you have something called renunciation. So that is the motivation when you wish to achieve liberation, emancipation from this samsara. As long as you are in this samsara, you are subject to delusion. Anger arises, jealousy arises. It drives you to do all kinds of things that you regret eventually. So once we are able to be free from all these afflictive emotions, that's when we achieve emancipation or nirvana or liberation. So if you are motivated to practice anything by that kind of attitude, intention, that becomes the practice of the person of medium scope. So that is even better than the third one. And then the best one is bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is the mind. wishing, aspiring to achieve enlightenment, not for your sake, but for the sake of other sentient beings. So it is like this. I see other beings suffering. I want to liberate them. But at the moment, forget about liberating all sentient beings. I cannot even liberate one person. But when can I do that? When I achieve enlightenment. So that's why you are aspiring to achieve enlightenment. For the sake, in order to help other sentient beings. So that's the best. So every time when we do any practice, try to have this motivation. So let's say if there are four people doing the same recitation or same practice, let's say we are doing our mani recitation. There are four, let's imagine there are four people doing the same practice, and one person does it with the worldly concern, just to have, you know, good health, good life. And then another one does with, oh, in order to achieve good rebirth. And then another one does with intention to achieve liberation. And then the final person does with bodhicitta, mind of bodhicitta. So even though what they are doing is exactly the same, but because of their motivation, the result varies. The first one, yeah, maybe it can help a little bit in this life. That's all. There's nothing more. But whereas those people who do practice with bodhicitta, the merit is double, triple of the earlier ones. So that's why for us, we are so busy, we have no time to practice. So when we get short period of time to practice, if you are able to do that, that's very good. So within a short period of time, you are able to accumulate or cultivate great merit. So that's why always have to try to check your motivation. And in traditional practice, so there is this, the posture of meditation. There are seven postures, but there is also sometimes eighth one is breathing in and out. That is to set your motivation right. When you focus your mind on your breath, let's say if you have a negative mind, it somehow distracts you from that. Our mind, we are ordinary people. Our mind can focus on one object at a time. So if you are thinking about this one, you cannot think of something else. So when we bring our mind onto our breath, then we are distracting the mind from that negative thought. Let's say if you are very angry, angry with somebody. So when you try to sit down, meditate, no way you will be able to meditate. Your mind keeps going back to the person, you know, what she or he said or what he did or she did. So in order to neutralize that mindset, you focus your mind. You start counting. So that's why we do practice counting your breath. So breathe in, breathe out, count as one. Breathe in, breathe out, count two. So when you do that, that your focus kind of shifts, and then your mind kind of becomes neutral. You are able to level like the field. And then with that, you can start with a motivation. So that's why every time, whatever, no matter whether it's a long practice, short practice, big practice, small practice, try to spend some time on this generating bodhicitta. And then you try to do that. That's a very clever or wise way to practice. And then how the three refuges, I have already mentioned to you, but just to emphasize the point, this is what I found on Facebook. This is from the sutra. Noble one, think of yourself as someone who is sick, of the Dharma as the remedy, of your spiritual teacher as a skillful doctor, and of diligent practice as the way to recovery. So your practice is the way to recovery. So if you don't practice, then yeah, no cure. And there's a quote. Memang sangshing pangba telang ne nawa tsowar gyube me mitung. Membe mali menji manye de nebarani kine nebaos. So what it says, if you are sick, so you go and see doctor, and then you buy a lot of medicines. First of all, lots of medicine and good quality ones. And then, if you don't take those medicines, there will be no recovering. You will not get better. And if you don't get better, it is not the fault of the doctor. It is not the fault of the medicine. It is solely your fault because you are supposed to take the pills, but you did not. So how can you expect to recover if you don't take the pill? So that's the emphasis. Who is already 11? Okay, we will stop here for break. And I have made Indian chai. So if you are not familiar, if I were you, I would just try a little bit. Yeah. So please, and then we will start. We will resume. This is supposed to be meditation session, but it went on. Yeah. Okay, now let's just do meditation. So first, let me just, so we have already covered about the motivation. So before we start, try to generate this motivation of bodhicitta. It's like, you know, in order to help all sentient beings who are one time, you know, our mother. So when they were our mother at that time, at one time, they have been, you know, kind to us the way our present mother or father have been kind to us. So it is a common practice conventionally to repay their kindness. But there are different ways to repay the kindness. You can, of course, try to repay in material ways, but that will only benefit them, only this life, but it will not benefit them in terms of future life and also from samsara and all that. So the best is to liberate them, help them liberate from the samsara and bring to enlightenment. So at the moment, as I mentioned earlier, we don't have that capability. Only when we achieve, only when we become Buddha ourselves, then we will be able to help them. So because of that, so may I achieve enlightenment in order to benefit or help sentient beings. In order to do that, I am going to practice this meditation. So that's the intention you're supposed to generate. And then once you have that intention, and you can spend some time thinking about the two causes that we have discussed. I'm not going to repeat that. So you spend 1 minute or 2 minutes, just thinking about the causes. The first one, you know, the uncertainty of your what is going to become in future, and then you look for a refuge, and you realize that Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha are the objects of refuge, and then you make this determination that I will take refuge in these three. And once you have that determination, and then there's a visualization. So somewhere, so do you see there? So in the center, there are different ways of visualizing the what we call merit field, but we are going to do the easy one. This is a concise one. So in the middle, so you know the Tibetan the throne, the which is supported by supported by four lions, a huge throne, and then at the center you visualize Shakyamuni Buddha. So I cannot point to this. Can you see anything there?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is supposed to be the main Buddha. So main Buddha, in essence, it's your guru. It's your root guru. So you have received teachings from many lamas. You have your own guru. So in essence, your guru, but in the form of Shakyamuni Buddha. Yeah? And then that around that, surrounding the Buddha, there are other Buddhas, and then Bodhisattvas, and then whatever you know about, all this. So we have Dagga Dagini and all the protectors, all this. If you cannot, you just visualize that Buddha surrounded by other Buddha and Bodhisattvas. So Bodhisattvas are those who have the Bodhicitta. And then when we recite that prayer, Lama La Kyabsu Chau, Sanje La Kyabsu Chau, Chol La Kyabsu Chau, Gindun La Kyabsu Chau. So there are three, normally it's three refuge, but we have this Lama in the front. The first thing is Lama, because Lama is like the, said to be the emanation or emanation of Buddha. Because Buddha cannot come in that form in the world to help sentient beings, but they have to take different forms. So lamas are supposedly the manifestation or the emanation of Buddha to help. So lamas are the one, or guru is the one that we are receiving direct benefits. So that's why that is the main one. So when you chant Lama La Kyabsu Chau, so you can visualize here there are rays, supposed those fleshy ones supposed to be rays of light emitting from Buddha's body. Sorry, then I skip one thing. So once you have visualized Buddha's there, in front of them, you see I have tried to have here the scriptural texts. Yeah, these are in front of them, these are the texts, but in actual, these are the realizations. That's the main Dharma. But the actual realizations, but in the form of scriptural texts. And then, of course, there are rays of light emitting. And then other surrounding Buddhas, also they have rays of rays emitting from their body. So when you say, Lama La Kyabsu Chau, then from the Buddha, the main Buddha, the rays of light, remember that is, in essence, it's your guru. So from your guru, rays of light comes. And also you can imagine nectars coming, rain of shower of nectars, emitting or coming from the main that Buddha. And then it, what you call, dissolves into you and purifies. This is a purification practice. Purifies all the negativities that we have accumulated, what you call, beginningless lifetime. And then there are specific also negativities that we created in relation to your guru, like lack of respect, like criticizing your lama. So these are negativities that we created in this life. So whatever you may not have, but whatever you have created, all these negativities, you visualize that all these in the form of black water or soot, then come, it's just the rays of light and the nectar fills your body and it drives out all the negativities in the form of soot or dark water. It comes out of your body and you imagine that all those negativities in relation to your guru are cleansed now. And then at the same, after you did that round, the second round, you imagine now, the first time is the white light. Second time you imagine yellow light. Now you are cleansed. So now you are receiving, when you say Lama Lajab Sucho, you imagine you are receiving all the blessings of your guru's blessing of speech, body, mind. Body, speech, mind. You are filled up. Your torso, your body is fully filled with all the blessings of your guru. So that's at one stage. So when you say Lama Lajab Sucho, so you are supposed to do that. So what we will try to do is we will just do a few rounds of these four lines, but later we will do maybe 25 of the one. We will just focus on the first one, Lama Lajab Sucho, Lama Lajab Sucho, Lama Lajab Sucho. And then we do the visualization, and then we move on to Sanje Lajab Sucho. So Lama Lajab Sucho means I take refuge in Guru, or I go for refuge in Guru. And then the second one is Sanje Lajab Sucho. So now, instead of, you know, rays of light emitting from your Guru, so now imagine all the rays of light emitting from all the Buddhas. And then the same, all the negativities cleanse, in particularly those negativities in relation to Buddha. So normally it's said that, like causing physical harm, of course, we won't be able to do that, even if we want to cause harm to Buddha. Yeah, Buddha, you cannot cause. But we have, lack of respect. When we see Buddha image, you know, we don't respect. And we will leave shoes or anything, like even showing your back, and all these are disrespectful to Buddha. So when you see any Buddha statue, you are supposed to treat that image as a real Buddha. So these statues are representations of Buddha and are to remind us of Buddha's quality. So sometimes, yeah, we forget that, you know, we have a statue here and we do all kinds of disrespectful things. So we do knowingly or unknowingly. So these kinds of negativities, we can visualize that all that is cleanse. And then after that, of course, another round is the yellow light, yellow color rays of light emitting from Buddhas and receiving the blessings of Buddha. And then when we say Chula Jyabsu Chau, there's I take refuge in Dhamma. So those the scriptural texts. So don't think that these are just, you know, just texts, but these are in essence the realizations, attainments of all those Arya beings, but in the form of scripture texts. So when you say Chula Jyabsu Chau, now the rays of light emits from these scriptural texts. And then, yeah, same way. And then we have generally all the negativities, and in specific, in particular, those in relation to Dharma. That is what is called, the main one is called abandoning Dharma. So abandoning Dharma is more like derogating other religion. Am I saying?
Being derogatory towards?
Yeah. You mean you just look down and criticize? What is that
disparaging
term? Disparaging. Denigrate, isn't it? Denigrate, yeah. Okay. Denigrate other faith. Like, you are, I am Mahayana, or the Hinayana, or the, you know, Theravadins are, you know, or true law and all this thing. That kind of view. So these are what is called abandoning Dharma. And then, yeah, if you are a practitioner of Tantrayana, then you say, oh, Sutrayana is too slow, and that kind of view. So that kind of view, all these kind of attitude are considered as abandoning Dharma. And then, of course, disrespect. You know, we keep Dharma books all over the place. Sometimes we put in our pocket. So these are even many people carry a Buddha statue or in your wallet, and then just bring it here and then sit on it. So these are acts of disrespect. Yeah. Yeah, so these are the specific negativities in relation to Dhamma. And then when you say, I take refuge in Sangha, so now that, so remember Buddhas are surrounded by Bodhisattvas, and also the, what you call the solitary Arya beings and hearer Arya beings. So all from all these beings, rays of light emits, and then cleanse away the generally all the negativities. And then in relation to Sangha, so that is your lack of respect. So here Sangha, we are talking about those Odin monks. When you know, I told you about Tibetan culture. So when Sangha community or the monks, any monks comes, there's a lot of respect. They render accord, great reverence and respect. So that is the practice. Because you have taken refuge in Sangha, that is the advice that you have to treat any Sangha as actual Sangha and then accord the due respect. So yeah, we fail that. Sometimes we just criticize monks and nuns all the time, you know. So these count as negativities in relation to Dhamma. These are just an example. There are a lot more, yeah. So when you say I take in refuge or I go for refuge in Sangha, so you do the same visualization. So everybody clear about this? Yeah? Okay. Yeah, I have this here, but I'm not going to read because time is short. So you know what Buddha looks like. So visualize that. Yeah. So first spend a few minutes just visualizing that. I'm not going to say anything, just visualize, and then yeah, we will chant that prayer. Lama la yabzo che wo sangye la yabzo che wo chu la yabzo che wo gendun la yabzo che wo Lama la yabzo che wo sangye la yabzo che Chö la yab so che o gen dö la yab so che o la ma la yab so che o san ge la yab so che o Chö la yab so che o gen dö che o lama la yab so che o lama la yab so che lama la yab so che o lama la yab so che lama la yab so che o lama la yab so che Lama la yab so che wo Lama la yab so che Lama la yab so che wo Lama la yab so che Lama la yab so che wo Lama la yab so che wo Lama la yab so che wo Lama la yab so che wo. You can also, you know, when you visualize that, yeah, you can also visualize when the rays of light, dissolves into you, also purifies negativities as well as any problems or any sickness or any unease, discomfort, whatever it is, you can also include that in your visualization as well. Sangye la yab so che wo, sangye la yab so che wo, sangye la yab so che wo, Sangye la jab zo che wo Sangye la jab zo che Sangye la jab zo che wo Sangye la jab zo che Sangye la jab zo che wo Sangye la jab zo che Sangye la jab zo che wo Sangye la jab zo che Sangye la jab zo che wo Sangye la jab zo che Sangye la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che Chö la jab zo che Chö la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che Chö la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che Chö la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che Chö la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che Chö la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che Chö la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che wo Gendö la jab zo che Gendö la jab zo che wo Gendö la jab zo che 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 wo Gendö la jab zo che Gendö che wo Lama la jab zo che wo Sangye la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che wo Gendö la jab zo che wo Lama la jab zo che Sangye la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che wo Gendö la jab zo che wo Lama la jab zo che wo Sangye la jab zo che wo Chö la jab zo che Gendö la jab zo che wo I give you a few minutes to do silently. 3 deep breaths just to de-stress. How was it? So we have been absolved of all our negativities.
Which I have one shit. Uh-huh. So now when we have this Buddha, Sangha all in front of us and getting blessing and cleansing. So after finishing this, what we do with the
So there are different ways. One is you can kind of all those surrounding, it kind of dissolves into the outer ones, dissolve into inner, and then finally everyone dissolves into the main Buddha, and then that one you can imagine that kind of dissolves into you and receive the blessing. Okay. So just to de-stress, let's can you? It's too loud. Did that help? Okay, now homework. Yeah, I don't think I have enough for everybody. So I think those who are from one family can share. So this is a stanza from Eight Verses of Mind Training. So I want you all to try this, because most of our disappointments come from those who surround us. Your family members, those people, you treat them so well and you expected a similar response, but they fell short of your expectation. So then, yeah, how we deal with them? Normally is, we what is that called?
Retaliate.
But it says here, even if someone I have helped or in whom I have placed great hope gravely mistreats me in hurtful ways, may I view him as my sublime teachers. Wow. So try this and see. So I just want to give you some tips based on Shantideva's. So first of all, so we have this common saying that even he, you know, after all that, you know, he betrayed me, he did this, he did that. You know, I don't mind if somebody else did this to me, but not from him, you know, not from her. That's what I will normally say that, isn't it? Because we have this expectation. So Shantideva says, when we come across this one, he says, Tani ngunje simjen la dindawayi nöba che, tewe simjen se chebe thala nöba di jungri. So it comes back to karma. Remember, from Buddhist point of view, anything, whatever we experience, it does not arise without a cause. It arises due to cause and effect. And that cause we have created, if we experience that kind of betrayal and negative response from others, that means in our life, in the past, somewhere along our, you know, past life, we have created that. So if you are able to view that in that light, it immediately reduces the, what do you call, the severity. So that's why I mentioned to, in Tibetan community, depression, prolonged grief is quite rare. Because whatever misfortune befalls, we automatically say, oh, it's my karma. So when you are able to accept that and then kind of interpret that as karma, so it kind of lightens the weight. So this is what it is saying. Whatever harsh treatment you receive from others, if you're able to view it as, oh, must have been my karma, and oh, it's good that, you know, now I'm exhausting that negative karma because I'm experiencing the result. So that is one way to cope with such experience. Then another one is that we always, when somebody harm us, somebody harms us, we always view that, oh, the person did intentionally. But when we did something and when we apologize, oh, you know, I didn't mean to do that, you know, I was under the force of anger, you know, I was so angry, I said this, you know. So it shows that it's not intentional. You didn't really mean to cause this harm. So there is a very famous quote from Shantideva. What can I remember now? Ngobo la so terikunde kede pemba la tona tenyan shedan ki lebe nyena tenye la nye riks. Which means that this is an analogy. If somebody wields a stick and hits you on your head, what is our reaction? We get angry at the wielder. But it says if you really think carefully, the hurt that was caused is actually the stick. If you are really going to get upset with because it caused hurt, then it says pain or hurt, it says you should be getting angry at the stick, not the person. But then you say, no, you know, the stick doesn't, you know, harm by itself. You need somebody to motivate him, you know, somebody to wield and do that. And then in that case, he says, so you justify why you are angry at the wielder, because, oh, you know, if without the person, the stick alone cannot harm you. Then he says, that is the reason, he says, Shantideva says that. Then, you know, that person is also, you know, what do you call, propelled by anger. We only hit when we get angry, you know. He was also, you know, triggered by this anger. So if your reason is that, you know, somebody did it, then, yeah, you have to get angry at his anger rather than the person. So these are really good, you see. So this is also one way to apply. And then another one, it says, It says, examine the incongruence between your fundamental desire and your action. So let's say if somebody, you know, betrays you, or somebody causes harm to you, and you get angry and retaliate. So he said that is actually incongruent with your fundamental wish. Your fundamental desire is to be happy, to avoid suffering. But getting angry is opposite. It counters, you know, your desire. Because when you have anger, when you have hatred, when you hold grudge against the person, there's no comfort. It's so, what do you call, there's a lot of unease. Imagine if you are, you know, what do you call this, harboring that hatred towards a person. You cannot even sleep. When you, especially when this kind of gathering, yeah, there is this, what do you call it, repulsion. When you see the person is like, you don't want to go there because that person is there. So that's where the forgiveness comes. I always say this, forgiveness. We say that, oh, I forgive you. I don't want to forgive you, as if you are doing a favor to that person. But actually, you're doing a favor to yourself. You may hold this, you may harbor this, you know, intense hatred against that person. But the person may be oblivious to that. You are not creating any harm to that person. He is sleeping so soundly there, and here you are, you know, boiling. So when you forgive, it is actually for yourself. Of course, forgive doesn't mean reconciliation. You can forgive, but no need to reconcile. So these are some techniques that when you encounter this kind of experience, you can apply. And from we have discussed this. So most of the things is actually your attitude, how you interpret the situation. It may be the same situation, but how you interpret it makes a difference. It changes your response. Imagine you are walking with a cup of coffee and somebody behind you pushes you and spilled that coffee on your favorite dress. What would be your response? What would be our response? You'll get angry and then you turn back and then you see it's a blind man. What happens? Your anger subsides. Because suddenly there's interpretation. Oh, it's a blind man. Oh, he couldn't see. So you see that a lot of things depends on our interpretation. So I wanted to show you a clip. This may be a bit inappropriate. I apologize if so. So you see how we interpret things. If it were an adult, your response will be completely different. Of course, first, how dare you? And then you looked at it as a boy, and you see, you change. So that's how we interpret. So it's the same stimuli, same circumstances, but because of our how we interpret, our attitude makes a big difference. So try to have that kind of, you know, try to use these techniques to interpret the situation. So that is not only good for the other person, it's very good for you. It will spare you of all that discomfort, all that suffering, pain, whatever it is. So that's your homework, and I hope to hear a lot of stories. Any questions? If no questions, then yeah, we will.
We say the dedication prayer.
Yeah.
First we say the short mandala offering, and then we continue with the rest of the dedication prayers.
Joje medo dam rida leje nyende gemba de sanje shendo medem bwa ye jogu namda ajen la jubara jo rana mendala gana ya daya me Rimbo je ma je bana je jo je keba nyamba meba ya kone gondo pewara sho lame kuze rabde je namgar atele jo jo yeba da loza dembe dume sasum je dobe meze ne joro je Korve shingam so pendan dewa malu jungwe ne Chere sewan tinsin jansu Siti bado den juro che Chedara kemba tangan kundo zambo deyan dejen Teda gwenye jesu talob che Gyawa deda dam Rabdo ngô shébe jawa thamjé ji ngô wa kala chodo ngá ba Dajin gyewe zawan digun jan sambo shuji rabdo ngô wa yin